Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you today, the 15th of December, 2010, just 10 days to Christmas. And I want to start off by hoping that you've gotten all your shopping done and you have come to the backyard tonight just to relax. And if you are a Jamaican or a Jamaican or just a visitor that have been to Jamaica or a lover of Jamaican culture, you perhaps know that at this time of the year, Jamaica is one big party. So I hope you have come tonight to relax and to share with us some of your party spirit. Well, you can consider yourself having a virtual drink with me tonight, whatever is your favorite drink of the island, whether it be a strong one or just a delicious one that may be non-alcoholic. So with that said, if you are on my list, you know that we're discussing tonight some way back customs that we, in my day, grew up with, not knowing really how it originated, but through the wonderful work of our historians that are digging up all of this material, that some of it was, you know, around but not really made public. But it's so wonderful that these dedicated people are putting all of this information together. And I'd like to start off by saying all the information I share, except for what myself and my fans bring forth in our sidebars, comes from these historians. And anyone can find them online. Tonight we're featuring some articles by Dr. Joy Lumsden, who is a retired professor from the University of the West Indies, but she's doing a marvelous job on several subjects. So tonight I'm going to be sharing some of the information that she has put together on her pages. And you can Google Dr. Joy Lumsden and get all of her material online. Okay, I want to start off first with a note that is very important because I know sometimes I struggle to read some of this material because it was written in Old English and the spelling is different and how the words are placed together are different. So I hope that my listeners will be patient with me a lot of times when I'm struggling with the pronunciation. And I must admit that I'm not a very good speller anyhow. So here we go. She starts by saying the novelist L.P. Hartley opened one of his books with the words, "The past is a foreign country. They do things differently there." So if you are bothered by words and terms used on this site, please note when the item was written and remember L.P. Hartley's words. I try to alter written material as little as possible so that the reader is brought as close as possible to the time in which it was written. With all the different language, thought, process, attitude, and environments involved, I hope you will find the site interesting, instructive, and even entertaining. So that was what Dr. Lumsden asked us to do, and I'm doing the same because, you know, she is, as she said, preserved the writing as it was written in the period. So the first thing I want to tell you why I selected this subject tonight, because the Jamaican diaspora know that we grew up with John Kuna, and it was always at Christmas time, and on our past Christmas shows, some of our listeners have shared with us, you know, how it went in their particular neighborhood. But I never had a clue. We knew that I think it came out of Africa, but didn't really know how it got started and how it evolved. So these articles that I'm going to share, synopsis of each one, sort of brings all of that information to the forefront. So I think last week I talked about Thomas Thistlewood's diary that was made public through a professor from the university recently. And this is one of the slave owners or plantation owners who was just writing for his own interests, his daily activities as he lived his life. He went to Jamaica and he wasn't a big plantation owner. He was just considered a small one in those times. And he was just keeping a diary. And he ended up having over, I think it's over 1,000 pages. It could be 100. I don't quite remember. And nobody knew about this. I mean, someone knew, but nobody publicly knew about this because they were owned by someone in England. And this professor heard about them and then followed the trail and got permission to view them and I think make copies and wrote a book. The title of the book is In Miserable Slavery. And now Dr. Lumsden took the portions that dealt with Christmas of those times. And just remember now that I don't think there was a lot written about the slaves at the time, except when they misbehaved or, you know, certain laws about them. But this man is writing about his interaction with them on his property. So we start off in, I think it's 1751. This is what he wrote in his diary. It was Tuesday the 24th. Received home 5 cano loads of copper wood, shot a diver in the great pond, whatever that means, a very hard shower this afternoon, employed raising the trash and weeding the plant cane spout in the stoop. C. Pierce also weeded our peas. Had Yule cake tonight. Brought home 4 cartloads, about 8 bundles of scotch grass for to serve the cattle in the holidays. 2 drafts heading wood from the trench side on the stoke hole. Oh boy. Old Tom brought home 5 fathoms of rope as usual. Now, this is the 24th. On the 25th is the most interesting entry. In the morning, a pretty strong north and coolish, pleasant day at times. Cloudy and some drizzling rain. Served a barrel of mackerel. 384, in parenthesis, amongst the Negroes. This is Christmas Day now, the 25th. Also gave a pint of rum and some sugar to each Negro, except the children. Excuse me. On the 26th, the Negroes drumming and dancing all night long. A very fine morning. Went and dined at Salt River. In the evening came home. Mr. Richard Peart and his wife here, who are going to set up a school in Savlabar to be opened on the 16th of January. Now, this is what my sidebar. Here it is. We're talking about 1751. So this man owns, I don't know if 384 mackerel was one for each person or what. It didn't say how many of these Negroes he was feeding, but he served a barrel that had 384. And he gave each of them a pint of rum and some sugar. Now, I thought that was pretty unusual to be serving these people rum. I can understand the mackerel, but the rum. Now, think of the same thing happening here in the United States. Similar things might be happening. It might not have been the same all over the island, is my point. He's just writing about what he did on his plantation with his Negroes. But I thought that was quite an interesting entry for him to have in his diary, as he talked about his other doings with his other people. You know, it was not just about them. The diary entries of the 2 people I'm going to quote tonight was never about the slaves themselves or the Negroes themselves. It was about that person's day, what happened, as anyone would write in their diary. But I thought that was quite interesting that he would be logging or writing that he served them. Apparently the mackerel was something special, because it was a holiday, he was giving them this treat and giving them each a bottle of rum. It didn't say how large the rum was. Now, on the 26th, which is the day after Christmas, the Negroes drumming and dancing all night long, a very fine morning. Then he went on to say what he did. Now, the next year, this few years after, this is 1760, Wednesday the 24th, he writes now about Johnny drumming at the Negro house last night, flogged him for it. December 25th, being Christmas Day, gave it to the Negroes, gave strict charge to the Negroes to make no noise. So apparently it was okay in 51, but in 60 he got a little annoyed and didn't want them to make any noise. And the one who was drumming in the night before, which was Christmas Eve, got flogged. Now, I found this quite interesting because they didn't take their drums away. They didn't punish them for taking, beating the drums by taking the drums away. He apparently Johnny kept his drum, and he just flogged him and told everybody to be quiet on Christmas Day because I'm sure he didn't appreciate the drumming. Now, in 1768, we're still in Thistlewood's diary. It was on Sunday the 18th. Gave my Negroes tickets as it is near Christmas. Now, that was an interesting article because Dr. Lumsden talked about lotteries being popular at Christmas time in that period. Now, it doesn't say if there were lottery tickets. It just says gave my Negroes tickets as it was near Christmas, and this was the 18th of December. Now, on the 25th, which was Christmas Day, he dined out and he talked about what he ate, you know, stewed hog's head, fried liver, quarter of roast pork with papaw sauce and Irish potatoes, bread and roast yam and plantains. He had a boiled pudding. It was very good. Cheese, musk, melon, watermelon, oranges, French brandy, and cognac, punch, and port. We walked into the new grounds up on the hills. Now, apparently, he doesn't mention anything about the Negroes drumming that day. But the next day, which was the 26th, gave my Negroes the day, which apparently they got a day off. Now, in 1769, what Dr. Lumsden did here was just picked out the part of the diary that pertained to December or near Christmas. Here again, he served my Negroes this morning 4 herrings and 4 mackerels each, gave Lincoln and Abbe each a bottle of rum, Kudju and Johnny a bottle, Dick and Salmon a bottle, girls a bottle, Pompey, Chum, and Cedar each a dram. Now, it seems to me like he's talking all about his Negroes there. I cannot imagine any of his friends naming Cudjoe, Kudju. But here again, this man was very generous with the liquor when it came to Christmas time. I don't know if any of the writings in his diary referred to giving them liquor any other time, but we're talking 1769, folks. Okay, in 1774, Christmas was on a Sunday, December 25th. There again, he served his... Did I speak about that one already? I must have. He served them 18 herrings. Oh, no. This is a new year. What I did before was 69. In 74, served my Negroes 18 herrings each. Likewise, gave Lincoln, Dick, and Abba each about. No, I did that. In 1781, Monday the 24th, people terribly alarmed for fear of an invasion. December 25th, it is said Governor Darling is returned to town, could not get the windward passage for French men of war cruising in the way. So they were worried about the French invasion then, and he doesn't mention anything about what he gave his Negroes. And she says here, Thistlewood's diaries are extremely difficult to read, especially in the duplicated version, which is the one I once tried to use, because of the old-style writing and the ravages of time. We must be grateful that they have survived and that determined scholars are mining this virtually unique source. So this man's diary is really providing a glimpse into a period where no official documentation was made about the people who were brought to Jamaica as slaves. You know, there was no formal documentation except that was published and that was available at the time because, of course, they were not important. There were information as to the amount of them that came on the ships, I suppose, of where, what plantations they went on. But how they actually lived and what they did was not, you know, really documented. So this diary gave us a glimpse, at least, of how some of the slaves were treated on this particular plantation. And at this time, I'd like to open up the mic if anyone would like to make a comment, or I was just really intrigued by all of this information that is part of the book, you know, In Miserable Slavery. So do I have any comments from my callers? I see that I have 973 on the board, 631-646, 404-305-953. Anybody want to put in their 2 cents? I was quite intrigued by several things that came home to me because I know that I don't believe the slaves here in the United States were, you know, having their, were allowed their drums. Number one, that I don't think that many people on a, slaves on a plantation in those days even spoke the same language or understood each other and were allowed to continue their tradition that they brought over from Africa with them. But we know for sure that it was, their drums weren't taken away when they went to Jamaica. And they were using it because in this case, on one occasion, it might have been more, but on one occasion, Thomas Thistlewood mentioned in his diary that Christmas Eve night, apparently he couldn't sleep because of the drumming, and he decided to punish Johnny by flogging him and giving them the day off. It doesn't say what they did, but warning them not to play the drums, to be quiet. So anybody want to weigh in on this? I don't see any hands. Now, here is another article she has, and this is from Eddie Long's History of Jamaica in 1774. And I'll be reading the article. In the towns during Christmas holiday, they had several tall, robust fellows dressed in grotesque habits and a pair of ox horns on their heads, spouting from the top of a horrid sort of visor or mask, which about the mouth is rendered very terrific with large boar's tusks. The masqueraders, carrying a wooden sword in his hand, is followed with an enormous crowd of drunken women who refresh him frequently with a sip of aniseed water whilst he dances at every door, bellowing out John Kunu with great vengeance, so that what with the liquor and the exercise, most of them are thrown into a dangerous fever, and some examples have happened of their dying. Oh, that's weird. Some examples, E-X-A-M-P-L-E-S, have happened of their dying. This dance is probably an honorable memorial of John, and the last name is spelled C-O-N-N-Y, a celebrated caballero at Tres Puntas, P-U-N-T-A-S, Puntas, in A-X-I-M, in Axim, on the Guinea coast, who flourished about the year 1720. He bore great authority among the Negroes of that district. In 1769, several new masks appeared. The Igbos, the Papaws, etc., having their respective connus, male and female, who were dressed in a very laughable style. So it seems like the John Kuno tradition, or the John Kuno masquerading, the mask and the costumes, came from what he's talking about, off the coast, the Guinea coast. And it was in celebration of this person that he talked about. This was the history of 1774. So he is saying what he thought it was. He bore a great authority among the Negroes. So the name of that person was it's probably John, Connie, a celebrated caboceer at Tres, Puntas, was the place in Axim, Axim, on the Guinea coast. So who knows? Perhaps that is where the John Kuno celebration actually started. So that was her tidbit from, you know, that period that she found. I mean, these are writings from these people. Now comes the writings from Lady Nugent's diary. I think Pieces of the Past has excerpts from Lady Nugent's diary. And this was in 1801. And she writes, "The 25th Christmas Day, all night heard the music of tom-toms, rise early, and the whole town and house bore appearance of a masquerade. After church, amused myself very much with the strange procession and figure called John Canoe, C-A-N-O-E-S, now it's spelled differently. All dance, leap, and play a thousand antics. Then there are groups of dancing men and women. This a sort of leader or superior at their head, who sing a sort of retroactive and seem to regulate all their proceedings, the rest joining in at intervals in the air, and chorus. The instruments to accompany the song was a rude sort of drum made of bark leaves. On this they beat time with two sticks, while the singers do the same with their feet. Then there's a party of actors, and little children are introduced." So apparently, she's not saying where this is going on. She's just writing about it, as I gather here. It's very interesting that is really the only information we have about what's happening during that period. So let me go back. I have to go to the computer now, because part of some of this that Dr. Lumsden has on her site is not... you cannot copy and paste it. So, excuse me, I have to read it actually from the computer itself, from the online itself. So she has beautiful pictures. If you go to her page, you will see some very good photography of what King's House. This is where Lady Nugent was the wife of the governor then, and she just kept a private diary that was made public several years later, of course. But she was just writing to, I suppose, fight boredom or just to amuse herself. She was not documenting for any particular purpose. So let me get back to what she wrote about now. There was Then there was a party of actors. Then a little child was introduced, supposed to be a king who stabbed all the rest. They told me that some of the children were, who appeared, were to represent Tipo Sabis, Tipo Sabis, children with the man was, and the child, the man was Henry IV of France. All were dressed very finely, and many of the blacks had really gold and silver fringe on their robes. After the tragedy, they all began dancing with the greatest glee. We dined in the council chamber, but went to bed early, but not to rest, for the noise of singing and dancing was incessant during the night. Now, this was Christmas Day. On the 26th, she wrote, the same wild scene, acting over and over again. And 3 years later, she wrote in the diary, on the 22nd of December, take my driver and Miss Kate Campbell, set off for Kingston at the same time. It is a foolish marriage. She must have talked about the woman she's writing with, but I hope they may prosper. After breakfast, little G distributed money to the black servants for Christmas. On the 24th, all the blackies, half mad with their preparation for tomorrow. On the 25th, Christmas Day, we both went to church at 10 o'clock, a long service, and in my present weak state, very fatiguing. On the 26th, nothing but banjos, drums, and tom-toms going well into the night, and dancing and singing, and madness all the morning. Then she talked about some other woman. Some of our blackies were most superbly dressed, and so were several of their friends who came to join in the masquerade. Gold and silver fringe, sparkles, beads, etc., etc., and really a most wonderful experience together. General N gave the children, whoever General N is, I suppose one of the society folks, General N gave the children money and threw some himself along them from the gallery, and in the scramble, all the finery was nearly torn to pieces, to my vexation. However, they seemed not to mind it, but began dancing with the same spirit as if nothing had happened, putting their smart clothes into the best order they could. We gave them a bullock, a sheep, and a lamb, with a dollar to every person in the house, from the oldest individual to the youngest infant, beside a complete new dress with two changes of linen. This is the case for every, gotta change the page here. This is all from her diary now. For every person, I suppose every person got to change a sheet and clothes. Now, I thought that was interesting too, because she's talking about her, I suppose, her house servants that she's treating to all of these things, which I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what was happening here in America during that time. But it looks like, you know, some people were kind on considering what was going on all over the world then, the new world then. some people would be considered extremely kind to their slaves and to the people that were around them. And not only that, at times enjoyed the revelry. But the point I really want to point out is the little mention how they made about, you know, even though in the scramble to get the money that this man was throwing out to them, they're, you know, I suppose they were roughing it to each to get as much money as they can, and their clothes got torn and ruffled. But they just sort of straightened them out and went on with their dance because it was the time for revelry. And I just think how that spirit never really left them. And I think that is key to a lot of things about people from the Caribbean, because they still never really totally lost their identity, because they were allowed to keep their drums and they were allowed to worship in the style that they had from the countries that they came. And apparently at Christmas time, they were allowed to do their thing. And I just think that is quite interesting. And I'm going to take a break now. So just give me a break. I need some water. Reading this sometimes is not all that easy. So I'm going to play a little music while I just take a sip of water here. So just bear with me. Welcome back. Here I am again, a little more refreshed. I want to remind our listeners, if you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio, we're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And tonight, because it's so close to Christmas, and being from the old Jamaica, and having such fun memories of our Christmas celebrations, I must confess to my listeners that when I came here in 1959 and around Christmas time, I realized Christmas was one day celebration here and shopping was not as big as it is now. At the time, I couldn't believe it, because I was coming from a culture where we were partying for a week, you know, or two, and didn't have a clue that this went back, way back, long before my time, into the 17-something that we have sort of found out because of the research of Dr. Joy Lumsden and a couple of other historians who have published the diary of these two people. And of course, the book that I talked about was published before. I suppose that was just a writer who was writing during that time. But I think it's very, very sort of surreal to me to learn that we've been partying from way back then. And I'm going to take you now, I don't know if any of the readers are familiar with Tom Kringle. Anybody on the board, my loyal listener from the Bronx, are you there? Let me see the information on Tom Kringle that I will read to you. This is from the 11th edition of the Encyclopedia of Britannica, first published in 1911. Michael Scott lived from 1789 to 1835. He was a British author. He was born in Glasgow in 1789, and he was the son of a merchant. In 1806, he went to Jamaica, first managing some estates and afterwards joining a business firm in Kingston. The latter post necessitated his making frequent journeys, and on the incidents, he based his best-known book, Tom Kringle's Logs, in Jamaica. In 1822, he left Jamaica and settled in Glasgow, where he engaged in a business. Tom Kringle's Log began to appear serially in Blackwood's magazine in 1829. Scott's second story, The Cruise of the MIDGE, was also first published serially in Blackwood's in 1834 to 1835. The first appearance in book form for each story was in Paris in 1834. Both stories were originally published anonymously, and their authorship was not known till after Scott's death at Glasgow on the 7th of November in 1835. So he was actually writing about Jamaica and his Jamaican experience in these books, and nobody knew because he was doing it anonymously. So they did not know about his travels and that he was actually writing about Jamaica. And I want to know if anybody on the board was familiar with that information or familiar with his writing. Anybody putting up here? And I must tell the listeners that in order to let me know if you want to labrish with me, you hit 1 on your keyboard, on your telephone, and I will see a raised hand on my switchboard, and then I can open the mic because I'm using this high-tech thingy that is so cool. I can see when you want to talk to me, and I see everybody on the board. I know that a lot of times people don't want to labrish. They just want to hear me read and stumble and fumble, but I really enjoy doing the research, and I hope that you are enjoying discovering all these neat little things with me. And I sometimes I don't know how interesting this may be to the listeners, but because the numbers are going so fast and the shows are being downloaded, I am assuming that people are finding them interesting. And I must thank the listeners online and those who call in each week or whenever you call in for your support, and ask you to continue to spread the word about Backyard Labrish and what we do. Because here on in the Labrish, I like to concentrate on things that we might not have known or paid attention to when we were growing up. And a lot of the historical items that I share sort of link a lot of the way we are, how we behave, how we do things to the past. And I know this, finding this out, that this has been going on so long, and really makes a lot of sense to me why we were so partied so hardy during the holiday season. It was a special event that goes back, the tradition goes back way, way back. And I just find it very interesting. So let me read some of what this man wrote on in this book, Tom Kringle. And as I looked toward the plaza, which was gaily lit up, I could see it was crowded with male and female Negroes in their holiday apparel, with their wholesome clear brown black skin, not blue black as they appear in cold country, and beautiful white teeth and sparkling black eyes, amongst whom were several Gumbe men and flute players, and John Kunus, as the Negro's Jack Padding is called, the latter distinguishable by wearing white false faces and enormous shocks of horse hair fastened onto their woolly pates, P-A-T-E-S. Their character hovers somewhere between that of a harlequin and a clown as they dance about and thread through the Negro groups, gizzling the women and slapping the men. At Christmas time, the Grand Negro Carnival, they don't confide their practical jokes to their own color, but take all manner of comical liberties with the whites equally as they do with their fellow bondsmen. I thought that was quite interesting, because what it is telling me is that at Carnival time, these performers didn't care. Apparently, the white people, both the plantation owners and apparently those who serve them in different capacities, would be gathered in the plazas to watch this performance. Because as Lady Nugent said, it wasn't just the drumming and the dancing. They actually had a play, as she described, you know, where the kids were imitating somebody and somebody else was imitating a French person. But here he is writing about what happened, you know, at Christmas time, and that they would take liberties with the whites equally as with their own people. This day was the first of the Negro Carnival or Christmas holidays, and at the distance of 2 miles from Kingston, the sound of drums and horns, the barbarous music and yelling of the different African tribes, and the more mellow singing of the set girls came off upon the breeze loud and strong. And that is the introduction in his book. And there again, I think there are some articles on the set girls that were dancers of that time. When we got nearer, the wharfs and different streets, as we successfully opened them, were crowded with blackamoors, B-L-A-C-K, blackamoors, B-L-A-C-K-A-M-O-R-S. Men, women, and children dancing and singing and shouting and all rigged out in their best. When we landed on the agent's wharf, we were immediately surrounded by a group of these merrymakers, which happened to be the Bush's Jonkune Party, and a curious exhibition of unquestionably ability it was. The poignant character was, as usual, the Jonkune or Jack Pudding. He was a light, active, clean-made young Creole Negro without shoes or stockings. He wore a pair of tight jean small clothes, all too wide, but confined at the knee, below and above by bands of red tape, after the manner that Malveaux would have called cross-gathering. He's describing, I suppose, how it was, the costume was draped. He wore a splendid blue velvet waistcoat with old-fashioned flaps coming down over his hips and covered with tarnished embroidery. So this writer, you know, he wrote this book. He goes into details to describe how the people were dressed. But, you know, I am wondering how they got all those things like the velvet waistcoat. You know, where did all those come from? And all these embroidered, and Lady Nugent talked about the gold and silver fringes that they had on their costumes. And I am just puzzled as to, you know, how that apparently they must have got them from someplace. They didn't bring them from Africa with them, I don't think. But I'm just being comical as I try to, in my mind, paste all this scene together. But we are talking about some way back things. But and what I see is that these the people doing the revelry were in costumes, and the costumes were beautiful because they were being described in details. And I was reading the description of how the pants was gathered up above the knee and below the knee, you know, I'm saying, and where the flaps were on the hip and all of that. I said, you know, those guys were decked out, as we would say now. Now, he went on to say that his shirt was absent on leave. You see how they write really different. His shirt was absent on leave, comma, I suppose, comma, but at the wrist of his coat, he had tin, T-I-N, or white iron frills with loose pieces attached, which tinkered as he moved and set off the dingy paw that were stuck through the strange manacles like black wax tapers in silver candlesticks. So apparently they made use of anything they could find to make their costumes creatively beautiful. I am just intrigued with all of this. His coat was an old blue artillery uniform one, with a small bell hung to the extreme points of the shallow-tailed skirts, and three tarnished epaulets, one on each shoulder, and O ye immortal gods, O Mars omnipotent, the biggest of the three, stuck at his rump, the point of the sheep's tail. He had an enormous crooked hat on, to which was appended in front a white false face or mask of a most methodically expression, methodistical expression. While Janus-like, there was another face behind of a most whimsical description, a sort of living antithesis, both being garnished and overtopped with some coarse wig made of the hair of bullock's tail. Oh, wow. He skipped up to us with a white wand in one hand and a dirty handkerchief in the other, and with sundry moppings and mowings, first wiping my shoes with his monocle, then my face, and in parenthesis, he said, murder, M-U-R-D-E-R, what a flavor of saltfish and onions it had. He's talking about the dirty handkerchief. He made a smart enough pirouette and then sprung on the back of his nondescriptive animal, then now advanced, capering and jumping about after the most grotesque men dressed in half skin and tire, head and four legs. So here's my point. They were masquerading and doing the Jankuno even then. And the description of these costumes were really elaborate. I don't know where they got those things from, but they certainly got them. And it went on, you know, to describe, in this is the book, the John Kringle book. He went on to describe all that went on. You know, there's also, I didn't know that there were people writing in patois before Louise Bennett, because, I mean, she's the only person I know. I found out after about the poet, I can't think of his name now, that wrote some poems in 1912. But there is some poetry here in the book. Massa Bakra, Lob Fussy, Bullock Caper Like Monkey, Dance and Shrump and Poke Him Toe Like a Human Person, Just So. So I don't know if he wrote that himself, this writer, or he got it from one of the slaves. Huh. Interesting. Now, again, I want to ask the listeners on the board. I see everybody listening intently, I suppose, and nobody's putting up their hand. But I want to ask you now to help me out here because I need some feedback. I see a lot of what we grew up seeing, if my loyal listeners on the board, coming from way back then, and had absolutely no clue that it went back so far. Now, there's another story. You know, what Dr. Lumsden did was just research different authentic material, and anything they wrote that referred to Christmas, she put it under this caption of Christmas from the centuries ago. I see a raised hand, so I'm going to welcome that caller in a minute while I get the rest of my papers together. And I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, and this segment is Backyard Labrish. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land Louis loved. Tonight we're doing ancient Christmas celebration in Jamaica with a look as to how it has evolved over the years and the remnants of which we lived, at least I did, when I was growing up in Jamaica in the 30s and 40s. So with that said, I'm going to open up the mic to 631-451. Good evening. You've got Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have? Let's tell the world who you are, sir.
This is not a sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got my numbers mixed up.
Yes, so
hello,
into
Janine.
Your special.
Tell everybody where you're calling from.
This is Janine from Long Island.
Speak a little louder. The mic. You're a little muffled.
Janine from Long Island.
Well,
can you hear me now?
Janine, how is the weather today in Long Island?
Very, very cold. Very, very cold. We had.
So it is here in my hot Atlanta. Also very cold.
Yeah, we had snow yesterday, and
really.
Yeah, it's not even winters yet. So
right, the 21st it starts. So what do you make of all of this history?
I'm telling you, I am not too surprised because we had to get the rhythm from somewhere. You know, but I noticed that every time they would celebrate is really on Boxing Day instead of Christmas, which is the day after Christmas, which we usually have parties on Boxing Day, too, when I was in Jamaica. So it's a tradition, I guess. But the clothes, I'm thinking maybe they did it themselves because they could sew. You know, the women were very handy.
Right, but I'm wondering where they got all that material.
Oh, anything that was thrown out, I guess.
The freedom to get things like that.
Yeah, maybe they bought it as well as it could have been given to them, you know.
Right, right.
Because it seemed as if the ones in Jamaica, the slaves in Jamaica, they were treated much better than the ones here. Because, I mean, they were getting rum, they were getting.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting.
You know, and they got some sort of freedom. They got some sort of freedom to party and to celebrate. And so at least they were treated kinder than what we hear here, you know. But
yeah, I don't really know too much about what happened in 17-something here.
Right.
But I know that they didn't have their drums. That
right.
I know.
Right.
So
I don't remember reading anything that, well, the slaves on a whole, they were very God-fearing people where they would really sing a lot. They are known
yeah.
to sing a lot and to worship God, you know.
Right, right. But I remember most of the music of that period was the, you know, there was the a cappella type of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody knows the trouble. I've seen that kind of
yes.
cappella. There was a certain amount of rhythm, but there was not the beat. Like
yes.
like the Caribbean people seem to have always had, you know, the beat.
Yes, yes. yes
and
yes,
and that might be because they never lost their drums.
Yes, yes.
So that was an important part of their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And come to find now, they always had that Christmas celebration.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why I suppose we party so much for Christmas, not even knowing that why we party
yes.
so much.
Exactly. It was passed down without us
yeah.
knowing.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really, really quite interesting. I thought
yeah.
that I would share it with the listeners tonight and those who may come by later on. And there is another article here that she had that had some interesting tidbits. And I really encourage our listeners that are really have an interest in history to go to Dr. Joy Lumsden's pages. If you just Google her name, you'll get to her pages. She has several articles on things that are, you know, are quite unknown to a lot of people. And she has been fervently putting some of this information together and is always asking people if they have something to contribute. Please get in touch with her, and her email is online.
Right.
Now, I am glad that she made the point over and over about trying to keep the material in the form it was written, because
mm-hmm.
it the spelling is totally different from how the language is now, and the placement of the words and what they use to describe, how they describe certain things, is really quite different.
Yes.
But, you know, I was saying that to someone the other day, and I am thinking, you know, I'm always encouraging people to leave a legacy, and what I'm trying to do, and thank to you, Janine, and a lot of the people who have called in or been on the show as guests, is to have a verbal, you know, hear the voice.
Yes.
In voice, you can hear a person's enthusiasm, their passion, how they describe something. It's different from the written word, so it makes it to me even more interesting.
Yes.
Like we have, you know, Professor Rex Nettleford's voice online. You can hear him and hear his passion. So we are just, the historians have to be piecing together things that happened in this period. But that does not have to happen again, because now we have evolved to the technology that we have now that is just, to me, priceless. We're really, I consider myself quite blessed to have come from, you know, way back, and I'm still here and able to enjoy and
right.
utilize the tools that are here to preserve.
Right.
So I really appreciate and really encourage people to participate in things that, you know, can be preserved for the next generation. Because even if it's not our personal family, you know, you people will have interest in things that happen now. And what I started off by saying is that, you know, how texting is the new way to communicate, or one of the new ways to communicate.
Right.
And the language that they use in texting is totally different from what you speak. So 50 or 75 years from this, people will think that some of the writing that is available now is strange, because perhaps it will have evolved to another level.
Yes.
You know, where right now there are words that we know that have a different meaning now than they did 50 years ago.
Right.
And we can think of several words that have taken on a new meaning. And since the age of the computer, you know, before that, a mouse was something that women would be scared of, some men too.
Yeah.
But now people are using a mouse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so many things have changed. So I suppose it's not too strange that we find it sometimes difficult to read or to understand clearly what was meant. We can only surmise what they meant to say, you know,
right?
By the way the thing have been put together. But have you ever heard or read anything about the Set Girls, S-E-T?
Set Girls, no.
Uh-huh.
No,
well,
I haven't.
Right.
There's
an article here on the Set Girls, and I think Pieces of the Past might have some information, and I perhaps will do that on one of the shows, because I think it's very interesting about how it was apparently a dance troupe, and they had beautiful costumes, and they were organized by the color of their skins.
Yeah.
They went in groups of light brown, medium brown, dark brown, and black.
Well,
when they performed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And they were their costumes were the same, but they had each group had something different in their costumes.
Yeah. But and what year was that?
Oh, we're talking about 18 something, you know, during the time of these writings.
Yeah.
I think I saw something in Oliver Searle's Encyclopedia of Jamaican Culture about the Set Girls, and I'll have to research that. I tell you, there's so much about that tiny island that is so interesting and so not well known that I would need another lifetime, I think. But I'm hoping that somebody else will be carrying on after I'm not able to do it anymore. But I will continue to read some. We have a little more time. Let me look at the clock here. And so we have a few minutes remaining.
Okay.
I can cover some of this Set Girl situation. There was an article by Cyril R. Williams, a tour through the island of Jamaica from the western to the eastern end in the year 1823. And this is what he said. I was grumbling in imagination at the incessant clamor of the clock in the morning of Christmas Day, when my ears were assaulted with another sort of music, not much more melodious. This was a chorus of Negroes singing, "Good morning to Nightcap, and health to master and mistress." They came into the house and began dancing. I slipped on my dressing gown and mingled in the orgies, much to the diversion of the black damsels, as well as to the inmates of the house, who came into the piazza, P-I-A-Z-Z-A, to witness the ceremonies. We gave the fiddler $1, and they departed to their grounds to prepare their provisions for 2 or 3 days. And we saw no more of them till the evening, when they again assembled on the lawn before the house with their gombes, banjos, and an old drum made of a hollow tree with a piece of short stick, which they rattled in time to the songs, or rather howls, of the musicians. They divided themselves into parties to dance, some before the gombes in a ring to perform a bolero or sort of love dance, as it is called, when the gentleman occasionally wipes the perspiration off the shining faces of their black beauties, who in turn perform the same service to the minstrels.
Wow.
Others perform a sort of rhythmic before the OBO drummer, beginning gently and gradually quickening their motions until they seem agitated by the furies. They were all dressed in their best, some of the men in long-tailed coats, one of the gumbears in old renegades, the women in muslins and cambrays and colored handkerchiefs tastefully disposed around their heads, and earrings, necklaces, and bracelets of all sorts in profusion.
Isn't that something?
And that was the writing of this man. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, but just listening to that, the dancers know that's how they are dressed, with the beads and the scarf.
Isn't
which
that
they call
something?
The dressing came back in our time because that's how they are dressed now.
Oh,
with a lot of
goodness.
Beads and the scarf on the heads and, you know.
Interesting. I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah,
because
did plaid skirts.
Beg your pardon?
Did they mention plaid skirts?
They didn't. In this article, anyhow.
Okay.
But I just thought it was quite interesting that they, you know, they were so costumed, and they talked about how well costumed they were, you know, and how they were in their best.
Yeah.
They were really in their best.
Yeah.
The entertainment was kept up till 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening, and during the time they were regaled with punch, R-E-G-A-L-E-D, I suppose they were served, that means, with punch and sandra, S-I-C in parenthesis, in abundance, S-A-N-D-A, sanda. That must be a drink. And they came occasionally and asked for port and wine.
Wow.
Indeed, a perfect quantity seemed to reign. No, I'm sorry. A perfect equality seemed to ring among all parties. Many came and shook hands with their master and mistresses.
Wow.
Nor did the young ladies refuse this salutation any more than the gentlemen. The merriment became rather boisterous as the punch operated and the slaves sang Philippines against P-H-I-L-I-P-P-I-N-E-S.
Yes.
Against their masters, communicating a little free advice now and then.
Wow.
But they never lost of decorum, and at last retired apparently quite satisfied with their Saturnalia, Saturnalia, to dance the rest of the night at their own habitations. So what I gather from this that these groups of people would go to other places to entertain whoever was there.
Yes.
And they just went up, shook their hands.
Okay. Yes.
They must be other plantation owners.
Yes.
Would serve them, you know, whatever they serve them. Sack, S-I-C-Sanda, S-A-N-D-A, punch and sanda. And they would ask for wine and port. They would shake the hands of their masters and, of course, give them little advice.
Yes.
So, you know, Jamaicans have been very, they are the slaves that went to Jamaica, have been very, I would say tenacious.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yes,
but
yes.
The interesting thing is that
they were
bold. Even though they might have been drunk from the wine and all of that, they never lost their decorum. Isn't that interesting?
Their respect, no.
Mm-hmm. And they left satisfied with their performance, and they went to their own house to continue the dance.
Is it sangria that they got, or what was that word?
S-A-N-D-A, it's spelled, S-A-N-D-A. And then in parentheses it said S-I-C in brackets.
Oh.
In abundance. It said they had that in abundance. And they came occasionally and asked for
port wine.
And
wow.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
And it says, indeed, a perfect equality seemed to reign among all parties.
Mm-hmm.
Many came and shook hands with their masters and mistresses.
Yes.
That means that they were given respect. And
mm-hmm.
they gave respect. At least that's what I gather from how it is described here.
And also they were given freedom to...
Right. Yeah. And this man is a writer. He's he was not writing in his diary. He was just writing on his visit there. He took a tour through the island from the west to the east. In 1823.
Wow.
Ain't that something?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Now, he went on to say, I must not omit one circumstance that diverted us all exceedingly during the festivity and seemed to justify the title of Saturnalia, which I have given to it. Oh, he made up that word. An old gray-headed man who had formerly been appointed the watchman to guard the grounds, had occasionally abused the trust and robbed grounds he was bound to protect.
Mm-hmm.
Considering his age and appearance, Mr. Graham had always endeavored to pacify those who had been robbed by compelling the thief to make restoration from his own grounds, rather than flogging him. However, the old rogue, having been detected in the very act of some outrageous robbery, had thought it prudent to retire and had absented himself from the estate for 2 years previous to this festival, in the midst of which he made his unexpected appearance and came up to his master laughing with perfect nonchalance. In other words, this man had run away for 2 years.
Yes, yes.
Stolen some things, but it was Christmas time and he just appeared at the festival laughing and being perfectly nonchalant about the whole thing.
As if it never happened.
Listen to this.
One in every crowd.
He shook hands with the man, as others had done, and said he was sorry he had been a bad boy.
Oh, boy.
But he never would do it anymore.
Wow.
So he received a free pardon.
Oh, man.
Isn't that nice?
His master was very lenient.
Yeah.
It wasn't that hard at all.
The next morning, a little after breakfast time, the slaves reappeared, dressed in fresh costume, that of yesterday being perhaps a little deranged with their romping. A new ceremony was to be exhibited. First came 8 or 10 young girls marching before a man dressed up in a mask with a gray beard and long flowing hair, who carried the model of a house on his head.
Wow.
The house is called the Jankunu, Jonkanoo. Excuse me. And the bearer is generally chosen for his superior activity in dancing. He first salutes his master and mistress and then capers about with an astonishing agility and violence. The girls also dance without changing their position, moving their elbows and knees and keeping time with the calabashes filled with small stones. Apparently they're dancing with the calabash in their hands. One of the damsels betraying, as it seemed, a little too much freshness in her gestures was reproved by her companions for her impertinence. They called her Miss Brazen and told her she ought to be ashamed. All this time, an incessant hammering was kept up on the gombe, and the kata, Windsor chair taken from plaza to serve as a secondary drum. So it is the drum. This is an act they're putting on. And the Jankuni attendant went about collecting money from the dancers and from the white people. 2 or 3 strange Negroes were invited to join as a compliment of respect. They also contributed to the Jankuni man, who, I am told, collects something from 10 to 15 pounds on this occasion.
Wow.
All this ceremony is certainly a commemoration of the deluge, D-E-L-U-G-E. The custom is African and religious, although the purpose is forgotten. Some writer, whose name I forget, says that the house is an emblem of Noah's Ark. Remember, the man had a house on his head. And that Jankuni means the sacred boat or the sacred dove, cake meaning sacred, and Jonah a dove in Hebrew or Samaritan. But as I have no pretense to this theology, I leave the subject as is. The Negroes have a custom of performing lubitation, L-U-B-A-T-I-O-N-S, when they drink. When the old runaway chief of a watchman reconciled himself to his master, he receives a glass of grog in token of forgiveness on the one side and repentance on the other. First,
what is that?
That he should not be flogged, and secondly, that he should not run away anymore. On receiving the glass of grog, he pours a few drops on the ground and drank off the rest to the health of his master and mistress.
What is
on
that?
All
some
those
liquor?
Occasions of festivity, the mulattoes kept aloft as if they disdained to mingle with the Negroes and some of the pious and regenerated, G-E-N-E-R, yeah, regenerated slaves also object to participate in the heathen practices of their ancestors. Yet they seem to cast many a wistful look at the dancers, more especially after they had taken their allowance of grog. Grog is some liquor.
Yes.
I've never heard it before. Part of their faith to renounce. My friend Quashi had gotten into disgrace and came to me to intercede for him. He had named faith to renounce. My friend Quashi had gotten into disgrace and came to me to intercede for him. He had lamed the horse. L-A-M-E-D, the horse, Romanos or something, in a nocturnal ride to another estate where he had a second wife.
Oh, man.
His mode of getting the horse out of the stable was not a little ingenious. The door is always locked at night and the key brought into the house. But the climate required security only from rain. Two sides of the stables are not even boarded, being defended only by strong bars of wood or rails. One of these was taken out by Quashi, that's the name of the person,
yes,
who then tied the horse's legs together and, throwing him down, dragged him onto the other bars. He needed to get that horse out to go visit the second wife.
Needed to get him out real bad.
Could not have ventured to intercede for him, for there is something so aggregating in a servant's abuse of his master's dumb animals. However, Mr. Graham only put him in the stocks on Christmas Day and dismissed him from the house to work in future in the fields. But Quashi felt it was a heavy punishment, for he begged to be flogged again and again if the master would let him still be groom. But he begged in vain. So in other words, he used to take care of the horses.
Horses, yes.
But he decided to capture one of the horses one night. And because of how the place was secured, he had to tie the horse's legs, put him down on the ground, and push him under the gate. It's funny, but it's not funny.
Your poor horsey.
Oh, my gosh. While the Negroes were enjoying their festivities, we were not idle or indifferent on our part. Our little dances were kept up every night with great deal of merit and good fellowship. Music and dancing, billiards, cards, and chess, all in turn presented their allurement. Well, it's almost time to go, folks, and this has been so intriguing because we now know that this revelry that we enjoyed in our days and that I'm sure people on the island and perhaps around the Caribbean still enjoy, this period of festivity when it comes to Christmas, goes way back, long before most of us were born and our parents were born and perhaps their parents were born. So with that, my dear Janine, I hope you've enjoyed all of this little mystery about what went on in the good old days or bad old days, whatever way you view them. But I must say it's interesting to realize how connected we really are to our past.
Yes, we are.
I find it quite interesting.
Yes,
and before we totally run out of time, I want to tell the listeners again how much I appreciate them and invite them to come back next week when we'll be having a more up-to-date version of what's happening or what we experience during our growing up in Jamaica at Christmas time. But I hope you enjoyed this little segment. And between Dr. Lumsden and I stumbling through this old writing, some little peaks of why we are the way we are, light was certainly shed on them tonight. So with that said, I want to thank you again, invite you back next week, and to remind you, there's only 10 days left for Christmas, so be sure to make this week a great one.
Yeah.
And again, we're here each week to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. Janine, help me out here.
Land we love.
We love.
Amen.
And with that, I want to bid you good night.
Good
stay
night.
Stay warm. And
God
come
bless.
Back soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.